Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. So interesting to read what people a long time ago were thinking about. Sometimes there are things that are kind of arcane and you wouldn't think about them. Other times you find people a long time ago thought about the same things we do. And there was a very interesting debate which occurred between two rabbis a long time ago. It had to do with the Haggadah. And the two rabbis were Rav, the rabbi called Rav, who actually is the first of, if you know these different designations, the Amoraim. He was the first, the next major group of rabbis, the Tanaim, and then you had the Amoraim. And he was the first. And he, I like him because he set up a famous yeshiva. I like to think of him as starting the first MJTI. So I feel kind of a resonance there with Rav. And he and Shmuel were debating about something which is we can connect with. They were debating whether in the telling of the Passover story, is the story basically about salvation or is it basically about transformation? Which is the story about? And Rav argued that it was basically about transformation because it starts out by saying our ancestors were idolaters and therefore we needed to be transformed into a holy nation. But Shmuel said, no, it's about salvation because it starts out, the story starts out, the Magid would say, long time ago our ancestors were slaves in Egypt. We were victims. And so is it about transformation? Or is the story of the Passover primarily about salvation? Well, it turns out that both are true, and other rabbis like Maimonides and others say, you know, it's both. It's both, and we're happy with that because the fact is we need both. Israel needs both. You and I need both. But today I want to stress one side of the equation, which is the transformation side. And David has already spoken to us a little bit about this when he talks about this period of Pesach when we take how we eat more seriously and all the other elements of Pesach that now we kind of kick it up a bit until next Passover, what kind of people we are. We want to be and need to be transformed. Okay, I'd like to talk about this a little bit. There's an interesting thing at the Seder. The kids sing the Manishtana. You know, Manishtana halayla hazeh, right? Well, the third verse is the image of transformation by going through the Red Sea. It goes like this, right? Sheba kol halolot. Anu metablim afilu pa'am echad, afilu pa'am echad. Halayla hazeh, halayla hazeh, shetei pa'ami. Halayla hazeh, halayla hazeh, shetei pa'amim. And in the Seder, what that's come to have to do with is the dipping of vegetables into water. But a rabbi I studied with mentioned, no, you know, really, this mitablim, it's the idea of dipping, and that it can refer to the dipping that we went through as we passed through the Red Sea, and then again as we approached Israel, the dipping in the water, passing through the water of the Jordan River, on the way to transformation from being a motley bunch of slaves to a glorious nation that God would use as a conduit of blessing for the whole world. So again, we're talking about transformation. How does transformation occur? Well, there's two ways. There's the hard way and is the easy way. Now, I'll tell you about the hard way. When we read about Pharaoh after the 10th plague, we read this. During the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, "Up, leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go worship the Lord as you've requested. Take your flocks and herds as you have said." Oh, and also, please bless me while you're at it, right? Now we wonder, why didn't he get the memo earlier? Why did it have to be after the 10th plague that he finally does what Moses said he had to do, let my people go? It's because he would not be transformed in his thinking the easy way, but the hard way. Why did it take so long? Because he needed to be motivated in a way that ultimately was tremendously costly to him and to Egypt. You'll recall Egypt's economy was completely destroyed, the death of the firstborn, and all the other things. So why don't we seek transformation? What, when you look at the big picture, you look at yourself, you look at others, why? Well, I think it's because the old ways have seemed to work up to this point. In other words, sure, they make the lives of others and ourselves miserable, and we create pain for other people that we care about. Yeah, it makes them unhappy. But at least the old ways are familiar. In some strange sense, they've worked for us. And so we don't change. Until, like Pharaoh, we get clobbered, and all of a sudden we realize, on a cost-benefit analysis, this is not working anymore for me. I think I will change my thinking and my ways of acting. So in that sense, we can resemble Pharaoh, but it's not the best way. Let me show you the right way to transformation, and this also comes from the same section of Exodus where we talk about the Passover. And the right way goes like this. When you get into the land, Moses says, and your children ask you, why do we do this with the dishes, and why do we eat this way, and why do we do? Then you are to say to them, it is the Passover sacrifice to the Lord, who passed over the houses of Israelites in Egypt and spared our homes when he struck down the Egyptians. So Moses says that. And then the next thing, it talks about the people Moses is speaking to, and it says this, then the people bowed down and worshiped. The Israelites did just what the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron. In other words, they were so motivated by all the fabulous things that God had done, that they said, okay, I am willing to enter into whatever area of transformation I need, not because I've had to get clobbered first, but rather because I think this God is so fantastic and so loving and wonderful and terrific, and his ways are so great, that I, even though the old ways are comfortable, familiar, and in some perverse sense seem to work, and that change is scary, we know that. Think about the first time you dove off a diving board as a kid, remember that? And you were scared out of your mind, and then, this isn't too bad, you know? Well, it's that way. The first Passover was scary because, again, slavery, at least it was familiar. Walking out into the desert, there's scorpions. What are we going to eat? What are we going to drink? I mean, being a slave is horrible, but at least you know what you got, you see? And so it was scary, and yet the cumulative effect of God's judgment on the Egyptians and his clear blessing on Moses and the crossing of the Red Sea, we say, okay, we're going to go. So transformation of the lasting kind, well, it can start with getting clobbered, but it's much better if it's rooted in love. Much better if we realize that we need to be transformed because God is so fantastic and it's okay. How was God's love made most concrete during the time of Passover. Well, I think as a Messianic Jewish community, we would see what happened in the year 33, that is the year I believe it did occur, the year 33, when Yeshua gave himself. Remember, he was at a Passover Seder. That was the last thing he did with his followers. And his act of self-sacrifice, the innocent one giving himself, not just as an example of self-sacrifice, of love manifested that way, but in some mysterious sense as satisfying God, God's justice, that act of the innocent giving himself at the hands of his own creation, that is the example at Passover of the love of God, which I really think, if we take it seriously, can motivate us to say, yeah, I want to be transformed in whatever little big areas there might be. Again, to quote Dave Nickel, kicking it up a notch. The last question then is simply this: how can we cooperate in our transformation? What is there to do? I mean, we can talk about it theoretically, but, you know, practically. And I just have a few things I want to share from my observations. And number one, look yourself in the eyes and tell the truth. It's very important. Look yourself in the eyes, and obviously you can't do that in a strict sense. How do you look yourself in the eyes? Look figuratively in a mirror and tell the truth. Stop the rationalizing. Stop the endless saying, oh, my parents did it this way, and I had such a horrible childhood, and if I was only treated better, and if you were only a better husband or a better wife or a better brother or a better sister, whatever the relationship, then I would be different. Cut it out. It isn't working. It isn't working. You know it's not working, but you're afraid, and the familiar is where you'd rather stay, but I'm telling you, it's self-defeating. So, number one, you look yourself in the eyes and you tell the truth. And there, you know, you courageously admit that the problem is not out there only, but it's with me to some extent, and in some cases, a great extent. And then you just want to get the help you need. It's really not rocket science. You talk to somebody that you trust, rabbis or whomever, and you go, listen, I'm tired of this way I'm living. It's killing me. I am going to get help. May I have help? And help is one of God's ways of helping us to be transformed. So how do you help in another's transformation? Okay? Well, look yourself in the eyes and tell the truth. Are you codependently enabling bad behavior? Bad news. Don't do it. Don't do it. See, codependency is a fake kind of love. I'm covering for you. And no, you don't do that. You don't live in that space. You tell the truth about yourself. And you don't get into that kind of mentality. And you don't be an enabler. And you get the help that you need. Okay. Is Pesach primarily about salvation? Well, it is about salvation, the salvation of our people. Yeshua's bringing salvation to the world at the season of Passover. Clearly, it's about. But it's also about transformation, as, again, Dave said, kicking it up. But quite frankly, I think at Ruach, I think what we need now is a season of transformation. I think this is a time when God would have us really look ourselves in the eyes and ask the question, what do I need to be and do to be transformed and to get past patterns which are really destructive and really unhelpful? I think that's the general truth for now. And the main thing is to realize we don't have to be afraid of transformation, because you've got Messiah and he's there saying, listen, let me take you by the hand. I got you. I love you. I'm on your team. You just trust me and let me take your hand and I'll manifest myself through others and I'll manifest to myself by my spirit to you, and you don't have to be afraid of the transformation. He would say, come on. We can do this thing together. And so I just want to you all and all of us at this season to embrace transformation. And when we say yes to transformation, we can finally breathe. In fact, I have a gesture that I was trying to think of. What's a gesture that captures the joy and the sense of release that comes with transformation? And it goes like this, and I'm going to ask you to try it. Ah. Want to try that? Ah. One more time. Ah. We're finally on the road to transformation. Shabbat Shalom.
Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be thus. Know your name and study your Torah, for Messiah.